It's a cult. It's a very addictive cult that spreads kind of like an infection. And so you need to be able to, when people get out, you need to be able to kind of teach them, hey, you know, that's not appropriate, and stuff like that. So, I mean, just being there for them, not completely just blocking them out of your lives. I'm not saying you have to exactly, you know, even like a person
Right.
or, you know, like what they did or anything like that. Just they have to have a reason to get out. If people are constantly attacking them, they're not gonna bother.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is Justice by Design, the podcast that recognizes that justice doesn't happen on its own. It requires the hard work and dedication to people bringing that justice to bear. I'm going to start off with an apology and ask for your patience with me in this podcast. As you can hear, I am more than a bit under the weather, but I still wanted to bring you this episode because I think the conversation is so important. Because this conversation is about hate. And the reason that I am focusing on this now is that we saw during the Trump administration's first term a sharp rise in white nationalist group recruiting. We saw the rise of a number of far-right groups. In fact, some of them, like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, became household names. And with all indications that that could repeat itself again, I think it's important to remember what happened then and figure out ways that we can try to prevent it. Remember that just recently it was learned that the Yellowstone shooter who wanted to commit a mass attack in the park was fueled by right-wing extremism and racism. We remember Charlottesville. We remember the symbols that we saw on the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6, 2021. So how do we prevent the recruitment and rise of white nationalism? And more importantly, how do we get those who are already in its grips back out? Well, I can't think of a better person to ask this question and other questions about this than somebody who is a former white nationalist. I am joined by Scott Ernest. Scott, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. I'm not the best public speaker in the world, but I do what I can.
You are going to be just fine. So I always ask my guests at the beginning of a conversation to introduce themselves and talk about what they do. I'm going to give you a more than a few seconds on this one because I believe your story is so important to this discussion. So sort of give us the Cliff's Notes version of what brought you to where you are today.
Well, my name is Scott Ernest, as was said, and I live in Northwest Montana. And about a decade ago, over the course of about 12 years of my life, I was a white nationalist. I was a Stormfront moderator. I was also a member of several other groups like the Oath Keepers and American Third Position, which became American Freedom Party. I was a close friend and associate of April Gatty, who was a infamous white nationalist. You know, I had moved out to Montana, and I helped run a group out here called Pioneer Little Europe Kalispell. And over the years when I was involved in the white nationalist movement, I started getting upset over the negativity and the violence that was in the movement. You know, I knew going in, you know, once, you know, at first I wasn't a white nationalist, but then, you know, I started going down the rabbit hole, and I knew that violence was a part of the movement. But I started really just noticing it in my everyday life, and eventually that got to me. So in 2016, I extracted myself from the white nationalist movement. I connected with Christian Piccolini, who basically also does, did exit counseling and de-radicalization type work. I started connecting with LGBTQ people. I came out as LGBTQ. I started meeting people who I had once opposed, people of color, Jewish people, just all kinds of really fantastic people. And when I first left the movement, I didn't really change very much. But over time, I've definitely, I like to think I've changed. I won't ever say I'm perfect. I'm a work in progress. But, it all helps having people around that care about you. And, I've also got a focus in that I want to help others. So I helped found an organization called Hands of Air. And Hands of Air basically does exit counseling at the moment. We're changing our focus to more extremism prevention. But I've had several clients who, I've had several clients who were Adam Waffen Division, which was a white nationalist terrorist organization. I've had other clients that ranged from just a garden variety racist to full-blown terrorists. I've had about 10 clients over the last 10 years, which may not seem like a lot. And part of that is there's not going to ever really be a mass de-radicalization ever going to happen. You have to wait until people want to leave. So, I've done pretty good, but it is slow going. So extremism prevention, preventing people before they get involved is kind of where we're going at this point.
Well, I appreciate that. So I want to first, because we're talking about, and I think a lot of our listeners may have people who they know, or people in their families, or people who they fear are veering too far in the position of potential extremism, or people who are already there. And I want to focus because I've heard from experts for years to say, preaching at someone or throwing facts in their face is not going to work. It takes being seen by someone who they trust, a family member, someone in their community, someone that they work with, to really begin to make bridge build that bridge. So can you talk a little bit more about what it was that made you realize that where you were in as part of those organizations was not where you wanted to be?
For me, the initial stuff that really kind of got me thinking was, over the years I've known, unfortunately, mass murderers, because of my time on Stormfront. I've gotten to see what people say w before the posts get deleted on Stormfront, because there's Stormfront has moderators, and there's always been rules, For example, no swastikas, or at least back when I was a moderator, there was no swastikas allowed. There was you weren't allowed to have like 1488 in your name, 14 being the 14 words, and 88 being basically HH Heil Hitler. But so I got to see posts before they were deleted, and most of those were extremely violent. But the key for me was knowing murderers. I've known, unfortunately, I've known Anders Breivik, a Norwegian who committed a mass murder of children. I knew him on Facebook as Anders Breivik. People like Glenn Miller, who was rounder on BNN, who murdered two people outside a Jewish center in Kansas City. That was kind of, those were kind of things that kind of jogged me out of that was when I would r rant and rave on Stormfront about those people, and there would be people defending them. It kind of makes you think, why am I around all these people that are defending murder? And And so that in my case, it was pretty much just that. Now, people leave for many different reasons. There's people that leave because of their family members, their spouses. In fact, that's a very common one. People wanting to leave for love. But my particular case, it was just because I was fed up. I was, feeling like, does this mean I'm supporting murder?
Yeah.
Basically. And so I couldn't deal with that anymore.
So, talk a little bit before I get to the work of that you're doing now and the work of Hands of Air. What drew you to the white nationalist movement?
I got involved by chance. I wasn't a white nationalist pr prior. I was, I would say, ethnocentric, so I was very susceptible to it. But I, had no idea anything about the white nationalist movement. The previous, when I had very first saw Stormfront before I became a white nationalist, I thought it was really stupid and that the people were jokes. And then I became one. So I became a joke, essentially. I ended up, I was one night, it was back when the internet was, still fairly young. It was, 2004. I was just searching through the internet. I think it was a Yahoo. I was going through the search engine, and I ran across a blog where this guy was threatening to try to get people to go to the home of two 12-year-old girls who had a, I mean, they had a racist band, but they were also 12-year-old girls. And this guy was trying to get people to go to their house and sexually assault them. And I kind of saw that and I was like, no, that shouldn't happen. So I contacted the authorities and they kind of shrugged it off and said, well, thank you for making us aware. Why don't you go let the parents know? Well, I went to let the parents know and became a friend of the family. And that person happened to be April Gady. And, becoming friends with April Gady unfortunately led me down the path that I led. And while it was chance and everything like that, I can't say I never got basically involved in the worst of the stuff. Obviously, I avoided the violence, but, I've said many horrible things over the years on Stormfront. So yeah, that was kind of my introduction to that life. And then I kind of went at it pretty much wholeheartedly.
So now, given your background, your own experience of having been through organizations like that and been through the movement and now counseling people on the other side of it, for people who have loved ones in this circumstance, what are the things that they should look for, and how might they try to talk to their loved ones about it if they see them being drawn to these types of movements?
I've been having a lot of questions like this lately for obvious reasons. And, the best thing I can always say is I don't necessarily think you need to block your loved one out. I don't think you need to not interact with them. They need to have some sort of anchor. When you talk to them, set clear boundaries. Let them know what expectations you have for, being around and, stuff like that. But, don't just, say, hey, you're starting to concern me, so I'm going to kick you out of my life. That's probably the worst move ever. Don't attack them. Be firm. Try do your best to try to I don't want to say let them say what they want to say, but which is why I say be firm, but you want to give them a opportunity to listen and basically learn from you. Because if you attack somebody that's in your family that is even flirting with that life, they're gonna dig in. They're gonna feel like they're being attacked, and they're gonna feel like like a raccoon in a alley that you've got cornered. So you always want to give them a way out. It won't always happen. They won't always take it, but it's the best thing to do. If they feel abandoned, well, there's people out there that will make sure that they don't feel abandoned anymore.
How do people find Hands of Air? How do you get your clients? Is it word of mouth, or are they referred from other places?
At the moment, we don't have a website. We did, but we don't currently. I do have some social media for it. I've got a Twitter handle, Hands of Air, for Hands of Air. I also have a Blue Sky, but I also have my own personal Twitter and Blue Sky, and that is a place where people will contact me. I get people contacting me all the time. Not just people that are curious about it, but people who are even people I knew that were in the movement that message me and say, "Hey, Scott, I'm out. I just want to let you know." And it's wonderful when that happens. It's always wonderful. Some of them don't want to be public, so they
Of
don't.
course.
But there are a few that do. One of my clients, Tyler, who was former Adam Woffen, he's kind of learning to do what I do now. He's even doing podcasts and stuff. And we just got done doing a documentary with Dead Domain. It's a 2-hour long documentary, so if you want to watch it, you'll want to put a bit of time into it. Yeah, it's really fulfilling work seeing all these people want to leave hate groups. Unfortunately, you can see that with everything that's going on in the world, it's also getting slightly worse. So that's why I say, unfortunately, de-radicalization, exit counseling is not the best answer. It's definitely going to be prevention.
So what does that prevention look like in your view? I mean, I'm thinking there are a lot of people who are going to need that. We have seen the pardoning of many of the folks who were in the Capitol on January 6th. But I recall clearly watching that and texting with a colleague who was helping me identify all of the far right and racist insignia that we saw on flags, on clothing, as part of that. And it felt very much that that was a fundamental part of what happened that day, even though in subsequent investigations, even the ones done by Congress, that aspect was underplayed. But to me, that feels like that and other things, particularly the attack, not just by the government, but even private companies on DEI, is just kindling that can be quickly set alight. What do you think is needed to prevent that from happening?
Unfortunately, the biggest thing we need is funding, and that includes government funding, and I don't see that happening anytime soon. One of the things that Hands of Air is going to be leaning into, so I brought on Dr. Danny Carroll, who he's a PhD of social work, and he's one of he's a social worker who this is his kind of the subject he studies. He was never a former himself. In fact, but after meeting him, he kind of suggested that I get my master's degree in social work, and that's what I'm currently doing right now, so that I can actually, I didn't want to be a non-trained former doing this work. I wanted to actually be trained. But Danny, one of his kind of ideas is we have to lean into risk assessment, doing our best to try to, especially violence, prevention of violence. Unfortunately, prevention of people getting involved in that life, without funding, there's just no way to really do it. So what we got to focus on, what we can focus on. And so Danny wants to focus a lot on prevention, and he is now currently in charge of Hands of Air. I founded it. I'm okay as a face, but I'm not going to run anything because I'm not that capable. I'm not very good at the business side of things. So, sure. Being a lowly worker is best for me.
But your experience is so valuable. I'll ask it this way. As you were coming out of that movement, you were put off, as you said, by the violence, the extreme violence in it. Looking back at that, Scott, in that moment, what were some of the things you needed to help your journey out of that space?
Friends and family, you know, meeting people meeting people that didn't just say, oh, you are this, so I'm going to completely avoid you. I hate you. You know, I met people that they believe in redemption. Now, I don't necessarily believe entirely in redemption myself. I tend to be more of, we're always works in progress. I'm not redeemed. I don't view myself as redeemed. People like to say it, but I really don't. I just do what I can. And all formers are, we have the possibility of slipping. Every single one of us. Now, some of us are farther along in our change. I am on the termination stage of change myself. The chance of me slipping back in is very unlikely, unfortunately it happens. The co-founder of Hands of Air, for example, has kind of slipped back into MAGA. She hasn't necessarily gone deep into the white nationalist movement, but she's definitely on the MAGA side of things. It happens to all of us. And so having those anchors keeping us out helps.
And what makes for a good, I mean, it's sort of similar to an earlier question that I asked, but in this context, I'm sure listeners to this podcast who have people like this in their lives want to be an anchor to help them out. So what does that look like?
Just being there, talking to them, as I said, not attacking them, but also being firm. Give clear boundaries, clear expectations. This is what I expect from you. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I really can't say. I'm definitely not an expert, unfortunately. Yeah. But,
your experience is really, really valuable. So, Scott, I'm going to close with what you need in your work in advancing this. And also, you say that you're a work in progress. I think it's so much better for all of us when we acknowledge our path and that none of us is at the end of it. And so I truly appreciate that. I consider myself a work in progress too, even though I might be in a different place. There are lots of other things for which I am a work in progress. And I want you to talk a little more about that and a little bit more besides money. I heard that, that this movement of formers needs in the years ahead to try to be a force of good.
I would definitely suggest everybody learn as much as they can about extremism. Next 4 years in particular, we're going to be in for a little bit of a ride. I don't think in the end it's going to be as bad as it appears. But, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of people who are lost by the end of it, just like there was the first time around under Trump. People are going to need to be able to, when they kind of get out of that kind of lifestyle, they're going to need people who are going to be able to teach them. A lot of them are kind of brainwashed. I like to kind of, when I talk about the white nationalist movement, I and MAGA and all right wing extremists, kind of branches, they're all sort of, it's a cult. It's a very addictive cult that spreads kind of like an infection. And so you need to be able to, when people get out, you need to be able to kind of teach them, hey, that's not appropriate, and stuff like that. So, I mean, just being there for them, not completely just blocking them out of your lives. I'm not saying you have to exactly, even like a person
Right.
or, like what they did or anything like that. Just, they have to have a reason to get out. If people are constantly attacking them, they're not gonna bother.
Right. It was funny, as you were talking earlier, I was thinking to myself about the experts in cult deprogramming that I've spoken to in the past, and that's exactly what this feels like, and the fact that you said it, I think, confirms that. And for people coming out of situations like that, the number one thing that they need is, according to these experts, is empathy. They want to feel seen, and that's so hard to do. And I get it when they're doing things that may feel repugnant to your moral center. But they need to be heard, and they need to have people that they trust. And I think it's important for those people in our lives. If we are going to be agents of change, we have to be willing to, as you said, keep your boundaries, don't take disrespect, don't welcome hate into your space, but have the strength to provide that bit of empathy, so that you can be a gateway out for that person. That seems easier said than done, but that's so important, right?
Absolutely. And to kind of also leapfrog off of that, people actively involved, you don't have to necessarily be quite as welcoming for them. I
Yeah.
do believe in being
That's a good point.
active towards those who are actively involved. I mean, you've seen my social media. I'm not exactly the nicest person towards those who are still involved.
Right.
But it works. I actually have had clients who I've butt heads with on social media. So it's not it just because somebody's getting somebody that is currently involved feels like they're getting attacked doesn't mean that once they start realizing maybe I shouldn't be doing this, they'll still try to get out of it. That doesn't kind of make them necessarily cornered.
Yeah. All right. Well, Scott Ernest, this conversation is so important, and I'm so grateful to you for having it. And I wish you continued success on your own journey as a former.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a wonderful experience.
You know, I know for people who have folks who are drawn to extremism in their lives, it's really hard. And that's really what this podcast episode was for. It's not to solve all the problems of extremism, because that really ought to be the work of federal investigators and federal agencies. And I hope against hope that that will still take place. But the real change is in the hands of loved ones and people who can extend a hand to people who have shown a willingness to come out of that. And I hope that that helps someone, and I hope that this is a resource that people can now turn to aid them in that. So I'm so appreciative of Scott. And I'm appreciative of you too for sticking out this podcast episode despite my very terrible voice. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and don't forget to join me next week for another hopefully healthier episode of Justice by Design.